With all the stories that matter across the Northwest, it's Greg Hughes on the 9 to Noon Show on Highland Radio.
And thank you very much once again to two debutantes, actually. Cathy Donaghy, author and journalist. It was great to have Cathy on. Declan Meehan is a regular, of course, community campaigner. But the other debutante was Joe Sweeney, who's the Donegal Chair of the Irish Farmers Association. So we appreciate all three, particularly, as I say, the debutantes in accepting our invite to come on and discuss the big stories. Okay. And lots of you texting in as well. Really, thanks so much for it. It never ceases to amaze me or make me feel glad to be on the programme that so many of you take part in it. So let's get to some of those comments here. Too many people coming in getting free accommodation doesn't help looking for their free house. There's a big difference between booking into an Airbnb for a few days holiday with all your supplies in the car and spending several months or years in an isolated cottage in Donegal with no job, no income and no public transport. Deputy Pringle represents an area where there are lots of Airbnbs. He should be careful about his public utterances. It could be costly at election time. Interesting, actually, when you talk about the location of many of those properties. Yeah, because I think it would be very useful. And I said this to Caroline off air the other day, that you really need to audit them. And I think I actually said it on air, you'd need to audit them to see how many of them, because you throw out a figure there, people do, how many of them are actually suitable long-term pieces of accommodation with decent infrastructure that would sustain permanent living. The EPA report finds Ireland will miss its climate targets for 2030. Does anyone outside the Green Party care? I do, because they're going to tax us more into compliance. My God, a witch hunt on Philip Schofield. Is she for real? Put the same situation into a male-female context and it would be a very different story. I was trying to figure that one out, how it would be approached if it were a female. Now, I'm not really quite sure if it would work worse or better for him. I can't imagine it or how the coverage might be. There's certain elements to that story. I think the fact that he knew him from a very young age. Now, he absolutely denies grooming the young person. There's a few elements of it that'd be a bit icky for me. But when we talk about witch hunt, though, and I'm not speaking on behalf of Cathy, like what is acceptable or unacceptable? Like if an individual is hounded to the point whereby, say, they take their own life, that's happened in the past, would you go, oh, maybe we went a little bit too far there? Or, well, some people even think that's okay. Now, that's a terrible thing for me to say, but it's to have the conversation. Like, when we talk about witch hunt, is like, when do you get enough from someone for something they've done? And the witch hunt would suggest that you grind them to the point of no longer existing, effectively. So I think that's really, you know, how far can you or should you go with that? How can the woman on the panel say it's a witch hunt, Philip Schofield? He lied and conned everyone for years and admitted he lied himself, indeed. It's interesting when you look at the age gap of people. Many big stars married much younger people, Elvis and Priscilla, Celine Dion and her husband. Yeah, well, Elvis... Priscilla was 15, 14, was it? There are many others as well. Celine Dion and her husband, not really quite familiar with that. Again, I would have a particular difficulty with it if you knew the person when they were a child. If you saw them mature into an adult and still went out with them. But that's just me. Greg, you discuss this topic every other day, but it's all falling on deaf ears in Dublin. The government don't give a damn about the people, especially the people of Donegal. RTDs come on your show and say this and say that, but nothing ever comes of it. It's a total and utter disaster, and the government's sending back millions of unused money. You should never see the likes of this in any part of the world. It's high time for a revelation or a revolution in this country. It's gone beyond time. We need to consider food security. Will our beef be imported from Central America rainforests, asks Andrea? Yeah, much of it, maybe Poland, other countries. I just wonder, is that, you know, that we aren't a producer, we're a consumer. Is that the plan? I don't know. Hi, Greg. The quicker the Irish people wake up to this nonsense government and get them whipped out, the better. It's coming to a stage in Ireland. You'd need four wages coming into the house every week to keep going. Good morning, Greg. I'll say it again. It's what we produce in emissions, which is nothing. 009. These people have seriously lost their minds and the farmers know it, yet some are going along with it because it's basically free money for them. I do not want my tax money going to farmers to cull cows. Most of these cows wouldn't be worth half what they would be rewarded with change is coming because, like your panel, farmers sit on their hands and take it. Another, has any study been done to ascertain how much carbon could be removed from the atmosphere by the transport industry? By having an effective transnational railway system, it would seem like a no-brainer. How many buses leave Letterkenny every day for Dublin? Probably 10 or more. A train would eliminate the need for many of these journeys. Yeah, indeed. But for some reason, you would love to see the Green Party go, hold on a second, there's a massive gap in the northwest, let's provide a train. I don't have the figures to hand, but the short-haul flights, aircraft flights, for an example, actually contribute not a great deal to carbon emissions. Long haul flights certainly, but there's other areas of society that are far more damaging. But also, was interested to learn during the week. Did you know that pig fat is in huge demand as a supplement to air fuel? That they're less toxic fuel. They need dead animals to create it. And that's going to potentially cause a shortage on that product. All right, and we're not talking about your bacon and sausages here. But I didn't know that air fuel, the less toxic stuff, contains animals. Did you know that? I must get the article and read it. I was flabbergasted by it. Nothing should really surprise us at this stage, should it? But anyway, be that as it may, I was like, what? They're using pigs? They're using pigs in aircraft fuel. Just curious, has anyone lost a bird of prey? At 8:50 a.m. today, I saw a bird of prey flying in a northeasterly to southwesterly direction over the Carrigart to Downings Road. There was a strap with a bobble hanging from its legs. Now, clearly that's someone's bird. I'm trying to think what kind of... Is there any sanctuaries up there or anything? But anyway, maybe it was going out for a fly, but it shouldn't still have its dangly bit, should it? So person saw, I presume it was a big bird, was it? Anyway, it was a bird of prey flying this morning over Carrigart to Downings. There was a strap with a bobble hanging from its legs. That's a mystery. I want to get to the bottom of that. 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or call 07491 25000. Lots of text still coming. You talked about when we talked about housing, you know, and a lot of the conversation about government or the civil service or whomever's responsible. And still people, lots of people, and I understand it. I'm not criticising it. I'm just highlighting it. And I'll get to some of the comments as we move on. Still blaming migrants, right? But it's, you know, it's not the government. It's not the government, it's the migrants, which I find really quite interesting. Okay, we're going to take a break now for the bingo numbers. Stay right where you are, because Seamus Gunn's coming up. So if you have any questions for Seamus, may I suggest you get them into us ASAP, and we'll try and get as many answered as is possible. Okay, you're welcome back to this Friday's 9 till noon show, 18 minutes past 9. It's the 2nd of June, and we welcome onto the programme Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co, Letterkenny and Remelton. Good morning to you, Seamus.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Great. And it's great to have you back on the programme again. Before we get to some questions here, we have a ton of them. I was reading that influencers in France are facing the threat of prison sentences or major fines under new legislation adopted by Parliament aimed at cracking down on undeclared advertising and fraud. Touted as an effort to ensure online personalities face the same advertising rules as traditional media, the bill has made its way through Parliament with cross-party support since March, culminating with a vote by the Senate on Thursday. So it's going to be much more clearer, I'd imagine, in France going forward as to, you know, what is an opinion or what's real and what is trying to influence and coerce the public, often for payment.
Yeah. No, I just caught my eye as being an interesting development in Europe in relation to this whole area of influencers, social media and personalities that are earning now quite lucrative livings out of it. If, for example, in France alone, they're talking about 150,000 influencers, and, you know, some might have very modest type of followers, but then some could have subscribers of millions. And obviously, that is a source of good revenue for them. And now in France, they're sort of saying, well, let's see, is this on the same playing pitch as the other media platforms, your TVs, radio, broadcasting, etc. And the competition side of it, the revenue side of it, the undeclared advertising, is which they're really clamping down on now. There's an allegation that this is widespread. what I was thought was quite interesting is if you run the parallel when we bring it home, how are we doing in this area in Ireland? This, I think, is setting a new standard in the European scene. I think they'll have a bit of a difficulty, strikes me, if a lot of these influencers are not in France, how they're going to actually access them with a view to enforcement and to policing this. Like the type of fines that they're talking about, up 300,000 or thereabouts, a few 2 years imprisonment, it's fairly heavy penalties. But if the influencers are not within that jurisdiction, and obviously, you know, the power of social media now, and that's an easy get around. Well, then how far will the tentacles spread in order to enforce it? But I think they're going the right way about it. You're probably going to have to see more of a European consensus and other countries coming on board and doing something similar to get everybody on, if you pardon the pun, the same platform for this going forward. Yeah. But it does need looking at, because they have a lot of power. And even in this country alone, there was a report there at the very, I think it was the beginning of the year, or maybe the back end of last year, where some 48 influencers were paid something around 300K by Bord Fáilte. You know, so, you know, it is big money. There are obviously people making money out of it. And we're self-regulated here under the Advertising Board. And we're governed by supposedly the Consumer Protection Act. And that goes back to 2007. And that, people might say, is a little bit outdated. Or policing this at the moment.
Now, I don't mind people getting paid by the council, for an example, as part of a Love Donegal campaign to sort of speak to their masses. Although some of the figures and stats are very heavily massaged, but anyway, be that as it may. And I don't really mind, Seamus, if you went on your Instagram and started, you know, supping a can of Fanta and going, ooh, this Fanta is delicious, look how young it makes me look, right? But I'm delighted to see them tightening rules on things like cosmetic surgery, tobacco, Bitcoin, sports and lottery. Do you know what I mean? I'd love to see us crack down a bit more on that here as well, because they're not looking to influence you or me. It is younger, more impressionable people. Yeah. And I don't mind the product placement as much, but this type of stuff, I'm glad to see they're actually prohibiting the promotion of that, because that would be easier to police, Seamus.
Well, yeah, you know, it's a fair point. It is a fair point. And they are identifying lines that they cannot actually air at all, which I would concur in that, and certainly agree that's a good way to move forward. It is positive. But when you just in passing mention the Fanta, the point about the Fanta is this, that if that comes to pass, and by the way, I just don't run an Instagram account at the minute, but anyway, but if that did come to pass, and I was lucky enough to be in that position, I would have to be fair to everybody, have to make it obvious that this is an advertisement for Fanta. And that is where they're falling foul. In this country, even alone, the Competition Commission, done some research on this, and this is fairly fresh, but they found that up 48% of these advertisements were not properly labelled at all. So even though I'm getting a little bit from Fanta for doing the ad, if I'm not promoting that and letting people know, by the way, not I don't have to say that, but this is an ad, or I'm in partnership with Fanta. Fanta are promoting this. I'm getting paid for it, by the way, so that you know I'm getting paid for it. That's where I have the difficulty here. Yeah. And I think that is very, very grey. And that's where this area can certainly be tightened up on, because there's very little, like if you're up to 50% of it, the fine, it's not properly labelled at all. Well, you know, that's in my mind anyway, just in my opinion, that is misleading.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Certainly could be much sharper. And that's where I think the French are sort of looking into this with a view to clamping down on it. Mm. I certainly love to see people making a living, and once they make their returns on it, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But people have to know the purpose of the influence and what they're actually selling.
Yeah, and as I say, I've no sour grapes, but we are very heavily restricted in on this platform as to what you can talk about. And like, I can't bring someone in here, for example, who talks to the dead or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Or offers cures or things like that. You know, like that's quite specific. But there are different areas whereby we're very heavy regulated. All right, we're in conversation with Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Company in Letterkenny and Remelton and online. And Seamus, this question comes in sometimes when you're on, often when you're not as well, and it's about neighbours' animals. I'll read the text to you as it was sent in to us. Any idea what I can do about neighbours' dogs that bark all day long, non-stop? One neighbour now has four dogs. They also wander about into everyone's gardens. We live in a rural area. I don't know how to go about saying it to them, as I don't want to fall out, but it's beyond a joke at this stage. So not only are the dogs noisy and numerous, but they're also wandering around the neighbourhood as well. What can be done in that situation?
It is very difficult and not uncommon. And I fully appreciate the dilemma. To raise it with the neighbour, that can fall out, very hard to make up. And they're both going to be there, hopefully, for many years to come. But sometimes that's the only way of dealing with these issues. If you want to go another route, then you're talking about bringing in a third party. You could consider getting legal representation. Would I recommend that? I don't think it's necessary at this stage. But certainly where you have mentioned about dogs coming onto other people's property, and barking, etc., that could constitute a nuisance. Certainly looks, on the face of it, it could be certainly an allegation of trespass. So those are, particularly, there's two legal avenues there that you could bring up and go along and get some advice on and take it down a route which would probably polarise the parties forever more amen. And so just keep that in mind. There has been, and under the auspices of the various different departments which are responsible, include local authorities, the Department of Agriculture, et cetera, there is a proposal to have a number of more dog wardens appointed in the various different county councils, from the various different county councils and throughout the country in general. Now, that has not yet come to pass, but it is essential, in my opinion, absolutely essential. And when there is enough personnel to police it, well, then at least you will have a proper port of call with the complaint, and an intermediary or a third party can may be able to go along and talk to the neighbour and see what can be done about this. But rest assured, there is an obligation on any owner of a dog to keep them and maintain them within their own property. Yeah. And if they are straying onto other people's property and doing damage, well, then the penny will drop and the individual will be held or can be held to account. And that can be expensive and it can go down the legal route.
Yeah,
no
but
doubt
I mean,
about
as
that.
You say,
but
that
introduce maybe the dog warden approach might be the way to go as a sort of a third party intermediary. But again, it will be difficult and there's no nice way of doing it. And the direct approach, it might be the first.
Well, you see, they're trying.
Most satisfactory.
Yeah, they're trying to avoid that. And we do generally in life try and avoid confrontation. But it is a rural area here. So if they do go down the legal route, the person who owns the dog is going to have a very fair idea who brought this up. And there may end up being a confrontation down the line anyway. So perhaps that they're going to have that first difficult conversation. Now, I mean, if there's a concern about the welfare of the animals, if they're barking all day, I presume they could make a call to the ISPCA, but that would obviously, you wouldn't want to do that mischievously. If you had a concern about the welfare of the animals, that could be an option?
It's the introduction, but you've probably already answered this point yourself in that they will know immediately that this has come from the next door neighbour. I mean, it'll be easy enough to surmise that or to conclude that. So it's the same result. Sometimes, unfortunately, you can't avoid some type of confrontation. Now, it may be a situation where they would like to have a third party that could go along and have a sort of friendly chat and to divorce it slightly and say, well, look, we don't want to fall out about this. but this is the issue arising, and can we do something about it? And try that somewhat softly in the first instance. But if it does not work, and it is interfering with their peaceful enjoyment of their home, in that situation they have their rights, and that's what the law is there for. And if one's dog is straying onto another's property, well, that just cannot continue.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, confrontation sometimes cannot be avoided, but they can be dealt with in a mature manner, that the parties should not have to end up falling out about it. If it goes down the legal route and you end up in maybe a district court or that, and you're seeking orders and maybe even seeking damages, well, then that could sour relations forevermore.
Irreparably, indeed. A farmer planted around 2 acres of land on our road, and now our road is a danger with roaming deer every night. Now, I'm not sure there's anything legally can be done about that. It's unfortunate, but...
I think there's certain period during the year where there are culls of the national deer herd. I can't say I'm an authority on it, but you have to check out the different Wildlife Act and the appropriate in their own setting. People can be a complete hazard, and there has been proposals to bring in more stricter type of legislation in relation to them, and where they are actually on the roadside and causing, in some cases, very serious accidents. But the difficulty is, again, in enforcement. At the moment, there is a national strategy for culling. That seems to me to be about the height of it. That can and should be taken a lot further. They haven't indicated whether the farmer actually owns these deer or what the situation is with them. But they have, as we all probably know, and especially in this lovely county, they have a tendency to roam for hundreds of miles.
Yeah. A family member owes this caller money. They sent a solicitor's letter 4 months ago after 7 years chasing it since. But since he's not been able to get it back, his brother replied to the letter stating he wasn't going to pay the money back. The money was used for property on a farm. So what can this other brother do about it? So, sorry, one brother lent another brother money 7 years ago. They chased them up with a solicitor's letter 4 months ago. The money was used to purchase property on a farm. Now, the brother who received the money says in a letter that he's not going to pay that money back. Where can they go from there?
Yeah, well, it's a situation, obviously, that has already started on a legal route. So all I can do is advise in general terms in such matters. If it's a situation where it's a debt, if it was a loan and someone gives another party a loan, the first advice I would give is to get some form of acknowledgement of that and to work out what is the repayment schedule and the time scale for it, and also perhaps whether there's interest applicable to it, and to fine-tune it somewhat, and that it's properly recorded, and therefore it can be followed up on. If you have a simple situation where one gives another some money and a period of time passes, and in this case, in debt cases, there is a period for the statute of limitations of 6 years. If you go beyond that and you have taken no steps and haven't secured a judgment within that period, then you could be met with a defence that the claim for the debt is statute barred. So you have to be always careful in relation to pursuing debt matters, that you come within that period. So that's something that is worth flagging. But in relation to loans, it should be documented. And if you're getting no response, well, then you have to go to the next stage and take legal proceedings. And it'll be up to the other party then to decide how they want to meet those proceedings. And whoever is dealing with the matter for the caller should be able to advise them.
My driving licence allows me to drive on any public road. If I have a moped or a tractor licence, I'm not allowed to drive on a motorway. Under what statute is that prohibited? In other words, under what statute would I be prosecuted if I drove a tractor or a moped on a motorway?
Well, I think you're going to have to delve into the road traffic legislation. There are pieces of road from the Road Traffic Act from 1961 up to the current day. I don't know how many different acts there are, but they are numerous in the extreme. You want to also, I think, check the position with regard to, they say, their license as to whether, in fact, they have an actual it's covered on their license for driving now, and I'm assuming that they do have. And I think then maybe an inquiry with the local Gardaí, have they been stopped? Then you'll have to then consult your own legal advisor as to where you go with that if a summons should issue against you. Remember this, though, and I think it's always very pertinent. People sometimes think that just because an allegation is made, they accept it. If they wait and they see if they're summoned, the legislation will be outlined and in detail in the actual prosecution summons that if they're ever served with, they will receive. And at that point, it's a matter for them to engage their lawyer to go into court, and it has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. So although an allegation or a claim is made, it doesn't have to be accepted by the individual. They have their rights, the constitutional rights, to stand their ground and to defend any claim that's made against them.
Our 30-year-old house is affected by defective concrete. Under normal circumstances, it would be worth around €200,000. However, if and when it's rebuilt under the redress scheme, the valuation will go up substantially, bringing our only child into significant inheritance tax as we have other assets. Surely this isn't just.
It's an interesting question, because the caller would seem to be getting the benefit of a new abode. Obviously, a serious upgrade if it's 30 years on, with all probably mod cons and a good BER rating. And naturally, the value will have appreciated. So the knock-on effect is likely that if it brings it beyond the threshold, so is at the moment for a child or a son or daughter, direct lineal descendant, is $335,000 or thereabouts for inheritance tax. If it's above that, after expenses are taken out, the difference will be taxable at 33%. Now, they seem to be making the point that while they would prefer to have the new house on one hand, they prefer to have the old one for the tax reason, for the tax benefit, which...
But we're into the...
It's a little bit of your cake and eat it. I get you,
but I think maybe the motivation for the question is, Seamus, and not contradicting you, is that this is another penalisation on their child through no fault of their own. In other words, they're saying, well, maybe the in other words, it's not their fault the house is falling down.
So I'm sorry, I can't agree.
You can't buy it. Okay.
No, Greg, I can't buy that. I mean, they're getting an appreciated asset. The other, it was referenced at being 30 years old. They're now going to have hopefully a state-of-the-art modern home, maybe worth significantly more. And if it does attract some tax on that, Well, so be it. That'll be my view. I don't think you can have it everywhere.
Right, two questions left I think I have time for. If I leave a site to my niece or nephew in my will, what implications does that have on them in terms of tax?
Yeah, well, a niece or nephew in relation to capital acquisitions tax, and that's the bracket that you're under, and that's the same for a gift or an inheritance. So it depends then on the value of the site. At the moment, that threshold is set at €32,500 in valuation. So if the value of the site exceeds that, then they would be taxed at the rate of 33% on the amount above it, between that and the valuation. So for example, as you said, if the site was valued at 50,000, well, then there would be seen to be a differential of 17.5, and that 17.5, you know, maybe some expenses out will be taxed at 33%. So that would be the tax implication there. The first 32.5 would be tax-free. If the site is worth less than 32.5, there's no issue on it at all, and there wouldn't be a tax liability arising on it. And the same would apply if the uncle or aunt wants to gift the nephew or the niece the site. It would be the same threshold, because it's the same tax bracket, and it's capital taxation.
All right. And Greg, please ask Seamus. I was selling a house. I got a bill in for €8,000 from my solicitor for the work that they did, paperwork they describe it as. But the sale has fallen through. Do I still have to pay the solicitor the €8,000? What's the story?
Well, it's entirely a matter between yourself and the party providing the service, and the account, I'm sure, is fully documented. The fact that the sale has fallen through is, on the face of it, is probably no fault of either party. If it's a third party who was buying, has pulled out, so be it. Maybe there was title matters to be updated in order to get the property marketable from the purpose of selling it and putting it on the open market, and hence there's an account or payable. It's an entirely contract position between the provider of the service and the caller. But if you're saying that just because the sale, if the account was only conditional upon a sale, well, that's different, because that in the sale did not materialise, and therefore the account wouldn't be payable until a sale would. But if the account is not in any way conditional, well, and as I would believe it's unlikely to be, well, then I would see it as still if the account is due and the work is done. The bill would still have to be paid.
Do people very finally have a sort of interesting view towards listeners? Like, you'd never get a call in saying that, you know, I had an old car at the house and I paid a mechanic to put a new engine in, and then I put it on done deal and the person came to look at it and then didn't decide to buy it. Do I still have to pay the mechanic who put the engine in? You would never see that question. But solicitors, the legal profession today, is it because people view them sort of as part of the whole process or part of the same, like a bank or something, rather than a third party?
It's a fair comment. I put it down to the slings and arrows of this profession, really. People maybe in a situation where there's work to be done in order to get, like, for example, if you were selling a property that was coming through an estate, just giving an example off the top, well, there'd be a lot of work to be done regarding the administration of the estate before the property would be passed on to the individual who was then going to sell it. And that would certainly incur costs, and those costs would then be payable. Now, the individual might say, but I was left that property, I shouldn't have to pay any costs. But in order to get it to that stage where they can sell it and get a significant benefit out of it, there are costs going to be incurred.
Yeah, but Seamus,
those have to be paid to the solicitor.
But I think a lot of people see solicitors as a hurdle to overcome rather than a third party to protect their interests. Do you know what I mean? I think it's almost that there must be that kind of an attitude out there.
Well, I don't know. I think that the legal profession is renowned for doing an awful lot of pro bono work. I think most practices do. And there's a lot of man hours put in right across the board and right across this country by solicitors doing that type of work, for which there's never a euro raised. And I'm quite familiar with it.
Okay, Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn. We'll do a whip around for you. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Company, Letterkenny and Remelton, and also online, Seamus?
I hope so, Greg. Yeah, DonegalSolicitors.ie, or just keep it country, gun.ie.
Have a lovely weekend, Seamus. Take care of yourself. Okay, back with more after the break. Okay, what are you doing for the weekend? Michael and Finland is coming in to join us for That's Entertainment. We're going to be talking about all things to keep us occupied, but that could involve you've got some nice plans. So if you're lucky enough to be out and about and have something to do for the long weekend, tell us what you're getting up to. Share the love. Say hello to someone. We welcome your requests and dedications as well. So just want you interacting and involved in that part of the programme as much as you always are. But as I say, it's not just confined to what's on the square screen. It's not square anymore, but you know what I mean. It's just whatever you're doing. Spread the love. What are you excited about? Maybe you've got grandkids landing that you haven't seen for ages. Share the love. 086 60 25000 WhatsApps and texts to that number. Or give us a call on 07491 25000. Can anyone explain to me why people who apply for planning retention and get it granted and then other cases not? Why is there not one rule for all? It appears the decision depends on who you are. Well, I presume, and I can't, and I'm not trying to, in other words, in any way say that what you feel is not what you feel or what you say, but presumably retention will be based on whether what you're looking to retain complies with planning regulations. Philip Schofield has been exposed as a not a very nice person. He thought he owned that This Morning Show and was untouchable. But now he's gone and he's not only brought down himself, but he's getting a good kicking while he's down, like what was done to Caroline Frack. When will the Green Party propose to fund a connection between the two railways in Donegal from Raphoe to Fintown? Maybe it might stop at Letterkenny or Ballybuffet on the way. And another, I thought that local food production within our own country was more environmentally friendly for the world as a whole, rather than destroying our rainforests and shipping loads across the world, creating more pollution. Surely Ireland by itself cannot keep the whole world green. No, but we can do our bit, and that's what every country is expected to do. But the contradictions and hypocrisies are abound, and I think that's what's hindering the transition. Brendan Devaney is ambassador with Plan.ie, and secondly, secondary to that in this instance, he's presenter of the DL debate. But we're not talking about sport. We're not going to talk about GA. I might ask him. I don't know what I'm going to do. But anyway, we're starting our focus on his ambassadorship with Plan.ie, because you've sprinkled the crumbs over the last while, Brendan, about you heading to Togo in Africa. But it's full steam ahead now. You are heading away sometime in the not too distant future. So just for those who don't listen on a Friday or don't listen on a Monday but tend to listen on a Friday, talk to us about the work of Plan and your involvement with them.
Yeah, the ambassador line sounds kind of important, Greg. I don't know if this will sit that well. I just try and help out as much as I can, yeah. But listen, I've been doing that bit of work for them, Greg, now for about 4 or 5 years, just helping sponsor kids. I sponsor kids myself, and I tried things with them, like Fast a Day sponsor a child and looking at wee ways to save the €22 in a month, because I don't really like asking people for money, because if you're like me and like most people, at the end of the month, the wages are gone. So I was looking at wee ways to, me and the wee lads would wash the cars, for example, here, you know, maybe save €14, you know, get towards the €22. So just make wee small sacrifices to sponsor a child. You get packs back, and you see them grow up, then you make sure that their safety, they've got, you know, food to eat, education, keeping wee girls out of early childhood marriage, the horrors of FGM and that, and all those types of things. They go into communities as well, Greg, so they don't just try and take a child and make sure they're okay. They go into the whole community, and then everybody sponsors the children and that. So the charity ball that yourself came along to there previous, we sponsored 21 kids on that night as well. So that's kind of led under this, Greg.
And before we get to this, talk a little bit more about... So, like, the children you sponsored and for how long you've been sponsoring them, do they give you updates on how they are, their well-being, their education? So, in other words, you quite literally see in that process. And as you say, you make you curtail certain things to afford this, right? So and I've seen you do it on social media where you'll fast for the day, or if you mentioned you in the family washing cars, just try and save a few quid. But you consistently get to see how their life is unfolding. So in a way then, do you form some sort of an emotional attachment, because you're invested in this other child on the other end of the earth, and you're seeing what your relatively small but important contribution is making?
Yeah, and just like that, Greg, I know, listen, we see it all the time, people are getting it tough in it, but compared to their life, you know, that's toughness on another level. So if we can help out a small bit, I have the pictures up in the wee office upstairs that Greg, and I would show them to the wee boys as we're growing up, and when we're washing the car, I tell them why we're doing it, you know, trying to give them some semblance of, you know, the amount of things we have around us that that's just and seem normal and ordinary for us, things that bloody running water and sanitation, things we just think are normal for a lot of people in the world, they aren't. I mean, there's 8 million people in Togo that I'm going out to, you know, half of them are below the poverty line, you know, still predominantly agriculture out there and that. So it's a really tough place to be. But for years, like a lot of people in Ireland, I mean, I was some of the best people in the world and contributing, obviously, and helping, you know, per head around the world and that. So I was giving to different charities. But, and of course, they're all doing great work, Greg, but I didn't really know the kind of outcome. Whereas I know now, say, with the 3 kids I sponsored and the 21 kids from that night, their information all comes back to me. So I've given them out to my friends, my wee nieces and nephews and that. They all write to the kids now. All the correspondence goes back to me. So just like you're saying, like, I'm constantly getting letters of wee updates. So you get pictures and that. So you can now and then send them something. It'd be colouring books and pens, something simple.
But it can be personal. But do you know what? And you mentioned a really great thing. What a great life education tool for as a parent. You know, and because it's not sort of shocking them into the awful realities of the world. You do it in such a way as they have a empathy for other children that aren't perhaps as lucky as they are, but they also then have an appreciation of what they have around them. And I think, you know, that's a really important thing as part of nurturing and rearing children that sometimes we can be guilty of forgetting.
Listen, the way the world's going, things is getting easier and easier, you know. And listen, don't get me wrong, there's another side to that in terms of like devices and media and all that, which is putting more pressure on kids. But in terms of those simple wee things in life, a lot of them are laid out for the kids. Education, for example, is one of the big ones. I mean, if you look at wee girls around the world, they are most less likely to be educated than the wee boys. And they're most, you know, they're in danger of things like early childhood marriage and that. So plan actually do target little girls more because they're more at danger in many ways. So being able to relay that back to your wee boys as they're growing up, of course, they're not going to take that much heed of it. But it's a nice thing in the background.
No, it's
them literally going from maybe about, say, 3 to 4 years old right up into their 16, 17.
Right, so we actually only have about 3 minutes left. So talk to us about the actual trip to Toga. We're going to be able to track you. Are you looking for people maybe to support you in that work? So just tell us what's happening and where the public interaction is there or information for them.
Yeah, well, thanks to Carol Wickham from Plans coming, Greg, because she sorted everything out. I didn't realise you'd have much stuff to do, visas and forms and oh my God. But anyway, she's put all that together. Brannis O'Donnell, who does a lot of streaming and video work, you know Brannis, he's coming with us to document the trip. So the trip only come about really, Greg, because of the generosity of Kieran Brogan, his sister Sharon, and Terry McNiff, the Mount Dargle Hotel, and my friend Kieran Keaton in New York, because obviously he owns a fifth in Mad Bar out there. Obviously, Greg, I don't want to take anything away from the charity. I'm here to help the charity. So when this all came up, we needed some backers, and fair play to the guys. He stepped in, phenomenal boys to have in your corner. So they've made the whole trip happen, Greg. So we're going to document it. I'm going out to meet some of the kids that we sponsor, and Bradis is going to video the whole trip in that, and sure, we'll have some content there, and maybe we could share it when we come back. We've been talking to a few people, you know, between media and radio and TV, and you know, obviously a charity ball at the end of the year. Now, so it'll be nice to have footage. And listen, the plan people tell you, Greg, that this will change your life. It's wild hard to envisage it, as opposed to you're actually out there on the ground. So I'm not sure what exactly to expect, but listen, I'm excited.
I think it's going to be emotional, you know, because it's it is a direct connection between these people who you've become invested in their lives. So you get to see, you know what I mean. It's going to be a roller coaster, I think.
Yeah, Greg, I know, and I know. After I suppose last year the tragedy in my life, my emotions are still very rocky because they're up and down because life's so busy. I don't get to think that much. I'm trying not to take on board it, and I'm thinking when I see these wee ones, because Greg, for years, this all came about, you know, you see these ads and TVs and different things, I can't like bypass them. There's just something like, and we're all different, and you know, it's just the way I am. I'm looking at that thinking, how can I help out a wee bit, how can I do something? So this has been building in me for years. So I suppose you're going to see them in that. I'm not sure how that's going to be for me, you know. I this image of it being, you know, very humble and nice thing to do, but I'm just, I'm wondering about keeping the emotions in check, all right? But listen, I'm looking forward to it, Greg. As I say, it should be a good experience. And even from the last post that I did on social media there, I got three people contacting me direct from friends of mine saying, give me the number, I'm going to sign up. So the end game here, Greg, is to create awareness for plan for more people to sign up, and one wee person at a time, we can help out people who need it, you know.
All right, brilliant stuff. Brendan, we'll chat to you before you head off, but thanks for the update. Brendan Devaney there. And you can go to plan.ie and sponsor a child if you wish as well.